Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 16, new chapter, text 1. The praise of King Prithu by the professional reciters. Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Iti Bhuvanam Nipatim.
Iti Bhuvanam Nipatim.
Gayaka Munichodita.
Gayaka Munichodita.
Tushtuvus Tushta Manasas. Tadvarg Amritab Sevasya.
Tadvarg Amritab Sevasya.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Iti Bhuvanam Nipatim.
Iti Bhuvanam Nipatim.
Gayaksha Muni Chodita.
Gayaksha Muni Chodita.
Tustuvus Tusta Manasas. Tadvarg Amrita Sevaya. Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Iti Bhuvanam Nipatim.
Iti Bhuvanam Nipatim.
Gayaka Munachodita.
Gayaka Munachodita.
Tush Tush Vush Tushta Manasas.
Tush Tush Vushta Manasas.
Tadvarg Amrita
Sevaya.
Maitreya Uvacha.
Maitreya Uvacha.
The great sage Maitreya said.
The great sage Maitreya said.
Iti.
Iti.
Thus.
Bhuvanam.
Speaking.
Speaking.
Nipatim.
Nipatim.
The king.
The king.
Gayaka.
Gayaka.
The reciters.
The reciters.
Muni.
By the sages.
Godita,
Godita,
having been instructed,
Tushtvutu,
praised,
praised.
Satisfied,
satisfied.
Tushta,
being pleased,
Manasaha,
their minds,
Tat,
Tat,
his,
Vak,
words,
words.
Amrita,
Amrita,
nectarian,
nectarian.
Sevaya,
Sevaya,
by hearing.
By hearing.
Translation. The great sage Maitreya continued, while King Prithu thus spoke, the humility of his nectarian speeches pleased the reciters very much. Then again, they continued to praise the king highly with exalted prayers, as they had been instructed by the great sages, purported by his divine grace Srila Prabhupada. Here the word Munichodita indicates instructions received from great sages and saintly persons. Although Maharaj Prithu was simply recently enthroned on the royal seat and was not at that time exhibiting his godly powers, the reciters, like the Sutta and the Magdha and the Vadi, understood that King Prithu was an incarnation of God. They could understand by his instructions given by the great sages and learned brahmanas. We have to understand the incarnations of God by the instructions of the authorized persons. We cannot manufacture a God by our own conceptions. As stated in by Narottam Das Thakur, Sadhu Shastra Guru, one has to test all spiritual matters according to the instructions of saintly persons, scriptures, and the spiritual master. The spiritual master is one who follows the instructions of his previous predecessors, namely the sadhus, or saintly persons. A bona fide spiritual master does not mention anything not mentioned in the authorized scriptures. Ordinary people have to follow the instructions of sadhu, shastra, and guru. Those statements made in the Shastras and those made by the bona fide sadhu or guru cannot differ from one another. Reciters like the Sutta and the Magdha were confidentially aware that King Prithu was an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although the king denied such praise because he was not at that time exhibiting his godly qualities, the reciters did not stop praising him. Rather, they were very pleased with the king, who, although actually in an incarnation of God, was so humble and delightful in his dealings with the devotees. In this connection, we may note that previously, on 4.15.21, it was mentioned that King Prithu was smiling and was in a pleasant mood while speaking to the reciters. Thus, we have to learn from the Lord or his incarnations how to become gentle and humble. The king's behavior was very pleasing to the reciters, and consequently, the reciters continued their praise, even foretold the king's future activities, as they had been instructed by the sadhus and sages. Om Agyana Timirandasya Gnanjana Salakaya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasili Gaura Bhaktabrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Stavitvaya Shivari Vridaya Vrataska Swami. So here we're starting to get more into detail of Prithu Maharaj, the great personality, Sakshavesha avatar, incarnation of Krishna, empowered incarnation of Krishna. And here we see that the singers were praising Maharaj Prithu, and he just appeared. And somehow or other they felt inclined to really glorify him. And in fact, Maharaj was sitting there and he said, "Well, I haven't done anything yet, and you're praising me." So it's quite an unusual situation, but the sages and saints had foretold that Maharaj Prithu was going to do some wonderful things and be a great leader for this community. And the singers had great faith in the teachings of these saints and sages. And so thereby they understood that this person was in fact going to do wonderful things for the kingdom and continued to praise him. Interesting thing that is mentioned here, how Prabhupada makes an emphasis that we have to learn from the Lord or his incarnations to become gentle and humble. Gentle and humble is the greatest feature of a devotee. To remain gentle and humble. To control our senses, to control our mind, to control our intellect, and just be humble and gentle in our dealings with both other devotees and with ourselves. Also being gentle and humble with ourselves. And also to the broader community. When the broader community sees a devotee is gentle and humble and respectful and so on and so forth to everyone, every form of life actually, then that draws people's attention and people become actually very attracted to that person and they will glorify that person. Really, really interesting. So here we have a great saintly personality, Prithu Maharaj, who showed these qualities, and he was going to develop it even more as time went on. He's a king, a leader, and he's honest and he's humble. And we're living in a Kali Yuga at the moment, and that's not the case with our leaders. Unfortunately, it's not the case. Our leaders, past leaders, the Vedic leader, were considered to be the fathers of a particular kingdom. They took on the responsibility of all the citizens, including even the animals. They would be the father, the protector of the citizens, whether they are in a human form or in an animal form. So Prithu Maharaj was going to be exhibiting these wonderful qualities. And these kings were not discriminating. They were equal to everyone. Everybody was equal to them. So politicians today, they discriminate. And they discriminate in that they will help those people that help them get to power. We're in the grip of a possible election coming up, both the federal election and also a state election here in Australia. Some of you may have heard the shenanigans that are going on within Parliament. Some of you may not be interested at all, and I don't blame you. But from a communications point of view, we have to stay up to date as to what's going on with these so-called leaders. They're not leaders. They only have a self-interest. Basically speaking, they're only interested in themselves, totally unlike Maharaj Prithu. Nobody really trusts politicians. Isn't that amazing? When they give a list of the people least trusted, they say, politicians are right up there with used car salespeople. So you can't trust either of them, you know. So, but politicians, they favour those people that will support them. And so thereby you have lobby groups that actually coerce the politician. If I give you $1 million, will you let me vote for you? You know, like that. Will you vote for me? Will you let my agenda pass? Will you turn a blind eye to the corruption that I'm doing in my business? You know, at the recent stage, I don't know, again, if you're aware of it, but there's huge corruption within the banking system. People have been ripped off left, right and centre by these huge conglomerate banks. I don't know if you also realise at the present stage, well, you would realise this. If you go to a petrol station and you fill up with petrol, what's the price now? $1.60 per litre or something? There's no regulatory body. These people, these multinational companies, they can just boost up their prices anytime they like. And the poor citizens are the ones that just have to pay. And the government will turn around and says, yes, we've got protective bodies that will guarantee that you get the right prices. That's absolute nonsense. They're all paid to just be quiet. Everyone's paid off. And depending on which country you're in, some are paid off above the table, blatantly corrupt, and others are under the table. In India, they blatantly understand everybody is corrupt. So we just pay the politicians. So he who has the most money will reach the most people and get the most votes and become victorious. It's interesting, you know, one of our prime ministers, a recent prime minister that is no longer the prime minister, they booted him out. He only got his prime ministership by offering $1 million to the party because they were short of funds to actually do a campaign against at the last election. And so he said, well, if you make me the leader, I'll give you $1 million. He's a wealthy, wealthy man. So he did that. In the end, they didn't like him anymore, so out he went. So these are the politicians. And these politicians are backed up by big companies like, especially, the media. The media moguls, they are the ones that actually drive the whole country. Did you know that? It's a monopoly. They actually control all the different newspapers, television, everything, and what their agenda is basically what will happen in politics. So the government cowtails to the media giants, oh, you please be nice for me, and please look after me, and I'll make sure that I'll give you all the regulations so you can distribute your television shows and you can do your movies and everything. Just make sure that you put in the paper that I'm such a good person and I'm really a pious and humble and gentle person and vote me in. These are the politicians. And then, because they know that the more they advertise, the more they put their big name up in lights, the more the ignorant people will vote for them. People are not interested in social issues so much. Generally, the general population is not interested in the welfare of the citizenry. They really have no idea. As long as I've got my beer, my football and my television, I'm okay. Don't disturb me. So they know that the more you actually advertise and the more advertising is out there for the politicians, they know that they're going to be the ones that are going to be voted in. So the simple person has no idea who they're really voting for. None of them can really be trusted. They may say something up front, but then in the end they may not. Our job is, as devotees, is to influence these people as much as the media is influencing these people. And we're making some headway with that. It's really amazing we're making some headway. There are some politicians that are actually open to thinking for themselves and being pious and honest. And we've got to get them before they get corrupted. We had the occasion here where Matthew Guy, who is a friend of the devotees, is very upfront, and he has personally asked me about various things on spiritual subject matter. So he's a real gem. Similarly with Daniel Andrews, he's similarly a good friend. And you hope that they don't get corrupted. Recently at the Shiva Vishnu temple, Matthew Guy has promised to give both the, not at the Shiva Vishnu temple, at the Durga temple, which, by the way, there was 100,000 people attending the last program they had there. Did you know that? There was 100,000 people at the Durga temple. 100,000 people. There was, you know, has anybody been here to the Durga temple in Rockbank? You know how big the car park is? That was full to the extent that people started parking out the road out the front of Durga temple and then on the freeway, right? They were parking on the freeway, so they had the government had to send a contingent of police to direct the traffic because there was like banked up on the freeway. It was a major disaster. Anyway, at that function, Matthew Guy has said, I will give $500,000 to the Durga temple. And he mentioned at the same time, and I know you all like the Hare Krishna temple as well, and we're going to give $300,000 to the Hare Krishna temple. In one sense, he's real, and we're hoping that the Labour Party will do the same as they did the last time. In one way, we'll accept it. But in another sense, they can understand that this is vote catching, you know? So you really don't know who to trust. There's a category, there's a way you can tell which person will eventually be the Prime Minister. In America, they do this survey to tell you who will be the next president or leader of the country. It's determined by how much hair a person has. Did you know that? If a man is balding, he's less likely to actually get the job as president. That's why when John F. Kennedy was up for elections, he was against Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon was an ugly-looking guy, and his hair was receding, whereas you had JFK, and he had a really good-looking hair, but what he was saying was not anywhere near as good as what Richard Nixon was saying, but everybody went, oh, he's the one we're voting for. So this is an interesting thing. There's no question to speak of policies or anything. It's more just an appearance thing. So these are the leaders. Actually, they get trained up as actors. Did you know that? Each politician, when you go into politics, you actually get a course in acting. How to bring across your agenda. How to look at the camera. How to stand. Everything. Because this is so influential in a person becoming the leader. But in actuality, people may make promises, but in the end, do they follow through with those promises? This is the thing. The other thing is that in the past, we've seen that they've elected actors as the leader of the free world. Yeah, if you can, those of you that can remember Ronald Reagan, he was an actor on the screen, a movie screen. And he knew exactly how to invoke a loving relationship that people felt, oh, he's just like my dad. But it was an act. It was an act. It was a total act. He was directed and scripted to be like that, to be very compassionate. But it was an act. Whereas here we see with Prithu Maharaj, it wasn't an act. He was a gentleman and he was humble and he had the best interest. As we will see as the story progresses, he had the best interest for the citizens. So these are the things that are going on. And of course, in previous times, the kings were heroic. They were soldiers, kshatriyas, leaders. And they guided and directed the citizenry. They weren't like the leaders of today, where if there's a war, they say, yes, let's go and invade Afghanistan or Iraq or somewhere, or in Tebe or wherever. They're 5,000 miles away in a bunker. And, okay, go and do your business. But whereas in the past, you know, like people like Yudhisthira, even Dronacharya, they were kings, both of them. They were out on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, right leading the attack. Sarvana was Prithvi Maharaj was in the same sort of category. They were very pious individuals, and they would lead the citizenry. A kshatriya, the actual meaning, the literal meaning of the word kshatriya, is one who protects another from pain. One who protects another from pain. So there could be pain in any way. That's the real meaning of a kshatriya. So it's a protector looking after the citizens. And Prithvi Maharaj did that. In the Vedic civilization, there was a monarchy. And when there was no question of a vote, there were questions of qualification. The great brahmanas and the great sages, the great kshatriyas, with real high sense of honour, they would select the king amongst those people who were born and raised in a family that were trying to be the first class kingly class. So this was what was happening. And the first and foremost principle that a king should present was how much they were surrendered to religious principles. That was the key point. And in today's society, our leaders try to hide the fact that they have religious affiliation. They don't want it known by people. Our current Prime Minister, although he is in a sense a religious person, or he says that he is a religious person, he is connected to a faith tradition which is the Pentecostal, born-again Christians, very fundamentalist Christian values. But he has to hide that. I better not say that I'm that, because that'll miss out on votes. And other people also, you know. So this is something that they have to be aware of. So the previous kings, they put the citizens first. They were the ones that were the first, most important thing in their life. And how do I rule the citizens of this world? I rule them with religious principles. And those religious principles were handed down to them from the previous kings, righteous people. So it's that Mahajana Yena Katha Sapanta. It's like, do as the previous acharyas have done. So they did that. They followed the directions of the previous kings. Not King Venu, but previous kings to him. So Prithu was a great king. And he just simply followed in the footsteps of someone else's great. You cannot be a great king unless you follow a great king. You cannot be great in anything unless you follow that person that is great. We all have the potential to be actually great preachers because we have a great spiritual master, a great Shiksha Guru for all of us, Srila Prabhupada. And then we have our own gurus who are also very great. And King Prithu would rule the citizens, and he ruled the citizens without any fear, without any duplicity, with proper discrimination, with equality, and with religious principles. He knew first and foremost the duty of a king was to be a religious man. So this is very important. And to promote sacrifice for religious prosperity for the whole kingdom. So he had to perform these sacrifices. Now, it's described later, and it goes on to it, how he did these different Ashwamedha Yagyas. Ashwamedha Yagya was a huge endeavour to get all the paraphernalia together to do this yagya. And generally, a king would, in the Vedic times, would only do one Ashwamedha Yagya. But he did actually 99 Ashwamedha Yagyas in his lifetime, and we'll read about that later on. So the reason why he did that was not to make a name and fame for himself, but it was actually to benefit the citizens. Because he knew that to perform these sacrifices, it would actually be of great benefit to the citizenry. It would actually enable those people to go back to Godhead. It was his actions and bringing that purificatory process into the kingdom that actually allowed the citizens to be liberated from their material trials and tribulations. And this is the role of a king. So this is the lesson that we can learn from Maharaj Prithu, that he worked hard for the general citizenry to be uplifted spiritually, those 99, it wasn't like he was setting out a goal or something. Ah, there's the goal that I have to reach. I want to get into the Vedic Guinness Book of Records and do 99 Ashwamedha yagas. It wasn't like that. I can get my name up in lights, you know, Prithvi Maharaj, 99 Ashwamedha yagas. It wasn't at all. His whole desire was that he would do this for the betterment of his citizenry. So we should take a leaf out of Prithvi Maharaj's book and understand that, as I said, you know, to do this Ashwamedha yaga was an incredibly difficult thing to do. But he did it. And it required a lot of hard work. So in the same token, we should actually take an example from Prithvi Maharaj. If we are sincere about being devotees of Krishna, if we are sincere about following the great acharyas, if we are sincere about spreading Krishna consciousness, if we are gentle and humble in our own lives, then our whole goal should be, what can I do to alleviate the suffering of the fallen conditioned souls? That's the mission that Prabhupada came here for. That's the mission that his predecessor, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur, everyone should have the opportunity to experience this love of God, this wonderful opportunity to serve Krishna and to get out of this material world. You know, and we can see that by our examples of our present-day gurus. Recently, we've been just so fortunate to have had so many enlightened individuals, pure individuals, coming here and blessing us with their association. You know, and Vedavyasa Priya Maharaj is now coming as well. It's just like one after the other. Then my Guru Maharaj comes, Hridayananda Das Goswami Acharyadeva. And so many, and then we had Devamrita Maharaj, you know, and then we had Kadambakananda Maharaj. And they're all different in their own way. You know, Devamrita Maharaj is very serious and yet jovial, and he gives wonderful classes, but is very power-packed, and he deals with the students, and he encourages students and young people to come to Krishna consciousness. And then Kadambakananda Maharaj comes and he's jovial and he jokes with everybody, and everybody's picked up with understanding how happy one can be in devotional life. All examples. Now Vedavyasa Priya Maharaj is coming and he's like the grandfather of all of us. You know, he just welcomes everyone and he's just so affable, gentle, humble person. And this is a wonderful thing. So we can take examples from them. But they don't do this in a mediocre sort of way. For any of you that have travelled at all, you know how difficult it is to travel, how much suffering it actually is just to travel. And they are constantly travelling. They have their ailments and everything, and yet they travel. We had an opportunity to have Kadambakananda Maharaj do a preaching session at our house, at Meditation House in the western suburbs. Now he was quite ill. And he said, if it wasn't for Bhakti and Bhakti, I wouldn't have gone. But as soon as he's there, it wasn't a hint of his personal illness at all, was there? Not at all. And he just sat there and he had fun. And he presented Krishna consciousness to all of us and uplifted everyone. So this is an example that's set for us. They work hard. And the example is set there for us. And the other day we had an opportunity, we had some devotees at our place and we were preaching to them, we had some prasadam, and we gave them the opportunity to watch the Prabhupada film. Now if anybody worked hard for spiritual life, it's the founder of Acharya A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And when you see this film, how Prabhupada worked tirelessly to bring people to Krishna consciousness, it's just amazing. And you know, I mean, if you look at other traditions, you know, the karmis, a non-devotee, a karmi, you know, a person that's attached to karmic results, works incredibly hard. You know, there was at one stage there was an idea that people would start working less because of automation. The 30-hour working week was a reality coming up in the 70s. And guess what? Now we're all working 40 hours a week, 50 hours a week. We're bound to our work. The employers have got it at such a stage where you're a casual worker and we can fire you anytime you like. And it's like, you know, it's so corrupt. But we're working harder and harder, so the materialist, the karmi, has no idea of spiritual solace. They're just working hard to maintain their bottle of beer and their football and their TV and their house and their car and so on and so forth. And then you have the jnanis, those intellectuals. They study and study and study and study. You know all about intellectuals. Our God brothers here is going to university, and you see these scientists and philosophers and engineers and everything. They study and study and study. People are up until 2 o'clock at night finishing assignments, and then they have to go here and there and that more. So they're all working hard. And then you have the yogis. If you want to take an example of the real yogis, those that are following the Hatha Yoga process, you know, drilling their respiratory system for hours, sitting in postures, backward and forward and bending this way and that way, and you know. So all these different persons and personalities are working incredibly hard. But we as devotees, somehow or other, we come to devotional service and there is a relief for us. There's no doubt about it. When we come to Krishna consciousness, there's like a relief. Oh, thank God I found the truth. Sometimes that relief becomes a little too relieving. And we sort of sit back and say, hey man, this is really good. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. But we have to start to see and have the same mindset that Prabhupada had, that the Acharyas have, that our Guru Maharajas have, that they're not happy until everyone is happy. When you see the film with Prabhupada, all he's saying is, I'm here just to see, make people happy. People think that they're happy, but they're not happy. In the material world, you can only get a little bit of relief, perhaps, that is happiness. But real happiness is not there. This material world is a miserable place. And Krishna says, if you come to me, I will give you relief. But we can't take it too seriously. We can't sit on our laurels. Krishna consciousness is not a cushy ride. It shouldn't be. Krishna consciousness should be we're enlivened and enthused to work hard for Krishna, for our spiritual master. So, in the spiritual world, there is true happiness. And that's where we really belong. And this is where Prabhupada was always encouraging us. You're not this material body. Don't you understand? You're a spirit soul. You belong eternally with Krishna. Now, the residents of Goloka are constantly happy serving Krishna. You know, they're Ananda Maya Vyasad. The essence of happiness is to serve Krishna. So they're infatuated with it. What else can I do for Krishna? And then Krishna sees, wow, these people are so happy serving me. I'm so happy that they're serving. And he reciprocates. And then when he reciprocates, like with the gopis would do something special for Krishna. Krishna's pleased. Oh, wow. And then they see that, and Krishna's pleased, and then they do more happiness. And then up, back and forth, back and forth. Krishna's happy, the gopis are happy. The gopis are happy, Krishna's happy. And like that. And all the residents of Goloka Vrindavan are like that, in that mood. There is only happiness in the spiritual world. In the Vaikuntha planets, there's no anxiety. No more worry, no more. This is our eternal destination. And so Krishna is happy. But in the material world, we may be fleetingly happy for a little bit. Our football team won. Our football team lost. Well, I told you that the last time, you know. And, you know, we may get a parking spot. Oh, I'm happy. Got a parking spot at the Woolworths. Or, you know, we may be suffering some ailment and we can't go to the toilet properly or something, and then finally the ailment is gone and now I'm happy, I can go to the toilet again. All these different things, you know, it's just fleeting little points of relief. You know, it's not even real happiness, it's more like a relief. So this is the material world. And the living entity, unfortunately, being in this material world, is tied up by karma. It's constantly tied up by karma. They can't escape it. Recently at a Bhagavad Gita class that we had, it came up and one lady asked, you know, why are we so tied up with karma? And how can we escape karma? Because there's karma that we know we've committed and there's karma that we know we don't know that we've committed. You know? And so when you're in this material world, although you try to be the best person possible, you're still committing different karmic actions. Like if we walk out of this temple room now, if you're a non-devotee, and there's like an earwig or an ant or something, and you step on it, guess what? That's karma. You've killed the living entity. Unknowingly. But there's a reaction to that. Just by the fact that we have our yogurt in the morning, there are microbes in the yogurt that you're killing by your digestive system. So it's like a con. So how do we get out? This lady was asking, so how do we get out? We can try to be as good as possible with our karma and not do anything wrong, but yet we're committing. So Krishna is saying that there is no other way out except through devotional service. When a person fully surrenders to Krishna, they are no longer entangled in the karmic reactions and actions and reactions. Krishna takes that away. Sarvadana Parityagam. Do not fear. I'll take care of everything. Just surrender service to me. Just be happy in rendering service to me. And it's a tragic situation because there's no way out. So, we have to ask, how can we encourage people to be Krishna conscious, because for their welfare, we need people to understand that the only way out is to serve God. When you serve God, then you can mitigate that karmic reaction. That's verified in the Brahma Samhita, where there's that section, Kamari Nirda Hati Kintu Chabakti Bhajam. Govinda Mari Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. You know, that the translation is, I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who burns up to their roots all fruit of activities of those who are imbued with devotion. Imbued with devotion. Completely saturated with devotion. That's what's the requirement. So generally the materialist is hell-bent on sense gratification. And our job as devotees of the Lord is to somehow or other encourage that devotee to keep doing what they're doing, but whatever actions they're doing, if they're working very hard, if they're studying very hard, if they're doing exercise very hard, to do everything in this material world for the service of Krishna. Dovetailing. So this is a way of actually getting out of this karmic pool, to get out of this material world, is to dovetail. And that was recommended by Rupa Goswami, that one should dovetail all his activities to the service of Hari. We're all born in this material world, Bhakti Manu Thakur. There's a song, Manasa He Hagi Ho Jokitu Mala Pilutwa Pare Nanda Kishore. My body and family, whatever may be mine, I have to surrender to the lotus feet of that youthful Nanda Maharaj. Nanda Nandana. And that is not an easy job, and I have to work hard. And as I said, there were 100,000 people at the temple down at Rockbank. So there are people that are interested in spiritual life, so we have to also somehow or other capture their attention. And it's our duty to actually hear the instructions of the previous acharyas and Muni Chodita, follow those instructions, as it pointed out in the purport here. So there's no difference. We have to apply the principles that have been laid down. And so Maharaj Prithu performed those 99 yajnas. And generally a king performs, as I said, only one. And he goes down in history as one of the greatest kings. And you'll see in the story where Indra, Lord Indra, great demigod, actually becomes quite jealous of the situation. He was freaking out. Oh my God, I've got the record, I've got 100, and this personality is going to beat my record. So he was really worried about that. So the question here also, and a major point that was mentioned in this purport, was about scrutinizing. Because Prithu Maharaj was an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, and the sages and the singers were glorifying him. So they understood that he was an incarnation of God, and Prabhupada points out that he was Shakshavesha Avatar. And so it is incumbent upon us, and what happens in this purport, what happens is we have a direction as to finding out how to qualify a person is an incarnation of God. And here it was mentioned Guru Sadhu Shastra, as Narottam Das Thakur has pointed out. So that Guru, who is God? We can't blindly follow. There are many, many people out there. I mean, in the 70s, there were a lot of people that claimed themselves to be God. Every second yogi that came out from India was, oh yes, I am God. Some even dressed up like Krishna. And there was one story, a really interesting story I just heard recently about how Prabhupada was in India and this person who was perplexed by the plethora of all the different people that were claiming to be God, that he asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, how do I actually distinguish who is God and who is not God? And Prabhupada simply said, who are they trying to be? And he said, they're all trying to be Krishna. And he said, so don't worry about whether they're God or they're not God, just worship Krishna. That's who they're trying to be, so just worship Krishna. And the gentleman said, that makes sense, and he became a devotee. So there are many, many different entities that are trying to be God. There's a couple of young ones at the moment that are popping up, and they're making incredible claims. You know, if I wear enough Rudraksha beads and have my hair in a really fancy thing, and if I can wear a big turban, or if I can have a really long white beard and look really saintly, then people will think, oh, he must be God. And then if you're halfway there, again, like politicians, if you advertise it enough, people will believe it. People are ignorant. But we as devotees ascertain whether a person is God by Guru Sadhu Shastra. We can. And in fact, this process of Guru Sadhu Shastra protects us right through our devotional life. We always get a chance to qualify different things by that process. Oh, there's one other I heard recently. You know who the latest God is? Can anybody think of who is that entity that knows everything, that is all present, and answers all prayers? Google, you're right. Sri Google. There's now a website. No kidding. There's now a website which is called, what is it? Hang on. Google.com. No, hang on. There must be. I had it written down. Maybe I haven't got it here now. Anyway, there's a website that Google is now God.
There is Church of Google.
That's it. Churchofgoogle.com. So, you know, there it's understood that actually, we all do it, don't we? You know, oh, I have a question about something. Let me approach Google. That's the answer, you know? And he's all present everywhere. I mean, I can do it in the middle of the night. I wake up and I have a question. Dear Google, there's the answer. And then, you know, he gives you the answer and you know, you're happy and you thank Google. Thank you very much, Google. The only thing is when your computer crashes, where's Google? I don't know the answer. The other thing is, you know, we get an ailment. We don't even bother going to the doctor anymore. We just ask Dr. Google. Hey, and I take, I've got a pimple on my head. That could be... yeah, it could be tuberculosis or something. Yeah. And then we go to the doctor and then we tell the doctor what the symptoms are. Oh, did you get that from Google? Yes. Even the doctor goes to Google. And, what's that symptom? I better Google that one. So this is the situation that we're in today's society, that now a mechanism or a technology is God. But we have to be very, very sensible and we have to not use Google. Google is a good thing if we can use it in Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada always said we can use anything, we can dovetail anything in the service to God. It's nothing like, you know, what's that verse again from Bhagavad Gita? Google. Ah, thank you. Oh, I want to hear that class by Devamrita Swami. Bingo, up comes the class. What did Prabhupada say on that? Bang, straight away. So this is the wonderful thing with the internet. But we have to use it in service to God. Dovetailing in the service to God. That's our duty. And so it's interesting. There was, but even then, you know, we have to check. This whole process of Guru Sadhu Shastra is a means of checks and balances. It's a three-way check. We're in this material world. And if you're not sure on something perhaps that your guru has said, or a guru has said, you know, you're perplexed. He's given some instruction and you're not sure. There is always the Shastra, and there's also sadhu that you can refer those questions to. And then you can come back to guru. And if, say, for example, we're reading something in the Shastras, you know, and it doesn't make sense to you, or there's some contradiction, you know, then you can always ask your guru, or you can go to the sadhus to get verification. There was a recent thing on Facebook where a friend of mine put up on Facebook, if in the Treta Yuga, when Lord Ram was... Did anybody read this one? When Lord Ram was on the planet, they lived for thousands of years. Why was it such a big deal that Lord Ram was banished for the 14 years in the forest? You know, it's only a small blip. So there are different things that always come up from the scriptures that we have to analyze, you know. And so there's guru and shastra and sadhu that will help us out. And similarly, if we're sitting with another devotee's guru, another spiritual master, and somehow or other what that particular guru has said doesn't ring true to you, doesn't really gel, then we have our own guru and shastra to back it up. So it's a three-way checking method. We always have that. So this is really important. And we also have to have intelligence. We have to develop a really good sense of intelligence, analyzing everything. And God has given us intelligence to actually work out for ourselves also. Because Chaita Guru is within us and he can direct us. Now, there's a really interesting story recently also that I heard, and I have to relate it to you because it's so funny. You may have heard it before, just about how a devotee has to use one's intelligence in preaching. There were these two sadhus, one guru and a disciple, and they're walking to a holy place. And the guru was getting tired, and so they got their baggage and everything because they were doing a long journey. And so the guru said, "Can we, at the next village, can you pick up a small pony?" Have you heard this one? And so then the guru hops on the pony and they're walking with the guru walking like that. The guru's on the pony and the disciple is walking next to his guru, heading towards a spiritual destination. And all of a sudden an apple rolls from the bag of the guru, some fruit. Now, previously the guru had told his disciple, "You only do what I tell you to do." Right? Don't do anything else except what I tell you to do. Yes, Guru Maharaj. And so the apple was falling and the horses kept on going. The guru was looking, "Hey, hang on, I've lost my fruit." And my disciple is not even picking up the fruit. He said, "Whoa, hang on. Why didn't you pick up the fruit that fell out of my bag?" And he said, "Guru Maharaj, you didn't tell me to pick that up." "Oh, okay. Well, look, if anything falls from this horse, you have to pick it up. That's my instruction to you." "Yes, Guru Maharaj." So off they go again, and they're walking away and trotting along, you know. And all of a sudden, the horse had to do what it has to do. Plop, plop, plop. The disciple stops, picks up, and says, "Guru Maharaj, this fell from the horse." The guru goes, "What sort of a disciple have I got here?" He says, "No, look, I'll make a list of everything that I'm carrying on me. And if anything that I'm carrying falls on the ground, then you pick that up." "Oh yes, Guru Maharaj, we'll do this." So anyway, off they go again, and they're trotting along. And all of a sudden, the guru slips off his horse, off the pony, and falls down. And the disciple and the pony with all the luggage are still walking on. He said, "Hey! What are you doing? I'm your guru. I've fallen off the horse." "Yes, but Maharaj, you weren't on the list. I'm only following instructions." So it means we have to have a little bit of intelligence when we're actually following the guru's instruction. And with that safety guard of guru, sadhu, shastra, we can't make a mistake. And we have to use intelligence, our God-given intelligence. Just be smart in our Krishna consciousness. Be like Prithu Maharaj. Have the same desire that Prithu Maharaj had, to actually help humanity in a humble and gentle way. We should present Krishna consciousness and get people out of this miserable material conditional life. We don't belong here. We are trapped here. We cannot even move. We cannot do anything about the karma that we have except by actually taking to devotional service. That is the saving grace. And we, all of us, have been endowed with that potency of our spiritual master to actually act and do the right thing and help humanity. And don't rely on the false leaders that we have today. We have to become the leaders. We have to take on the role of spiritually guiding people. Even if they're our political leaders, even if they're our religious leaders, if they're our intellectual leaders, our scientists, our doctors and everything, we have to lead them. This mantle has been given to us. Each and every one of us have to do that. So I'll leave you with that. Any comments or questions at all? Yes, Guru.
Just a comment.
Yeah.
That it's evident that the lack of spiritual knowledge and spiritual understanding, the social administrators, the quality of social administrators is compromised.
Yep.
In the Vedic system, there is monarchy, one person trained from very early on with spiritual knowledge and also public administration, personally involved with wars and everything, so they know the cost of war.
Mm.
And so that's the ideal situation. Then comes the Greek model of meritocracy.
Yep.
That there is not one idle person available, so let's have a group of people who are skilled with particular sets of qualities that would be required to run the society.
Mm-hmm.
But in that system, the problem of group power becomes concerned. One group wants to, you know, come across as better than the other group, so then that falls. And then that's based purely on skill, not based on spiritual knowledge.
Yep.
So that's purely skill. And then comes Kali Yuga, where there is neither merit nor spiritual knowledge. It's purely populism. Like you said, number of hair on your head decides whether you'll be president or not.
Yep.
So there's actually an interesting statistical theorem, which is the Gini coefficient, which is a measure of wealth distribution in a nation.
Yep.
So it tells you, you know, what is the size of 1% and the size of the others. And it is directly correlated to the amount of crime in that nation or in that society.
Yep, that's right.
So, with the current government here in this country, they've allowed work to move overseas, especially to India. A lot of IT work goes. And what it is doing is from 1996 till 2016, the Gini coefficient has increased towards a higher number, which means there is greater wealth inequality.
Yep.
And the factor of crime is when there is skilled people, but they don't have opportunities. That's when they take to crime. That's where their minds become corrupted.
Absolutely. Yep.
So it is the responsibility, therefore, of the government to not create, to either minimize that gap of wealth inequality or create opportunities so that people are positively occupied and engaged.
Yep.
But instead, what the government is doing, because of lobbyists and, you know, what goes on with
feathering their own list.
Yep. So there is this opportunity is being moved overseas, where the local people, qualified people, don't have proper jobs. They're frustrated. There's lack of engagement for them. So all of this actually is based on lack of spiritual understanding. It's just here and now. And the Vedic system, I see, although it sounds in the modern times pretty absurd to have a monarch, one person rule the world, but that's a qualified person in comparison to the current system where...
Still people want it. I mean, a classic example is Prince Harry, if you've been up to date with what's going on. We had Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, or Meghan, whatever her name is now, movie star. People desire to have a regal leader. Now, he's a prince, he's not even in line to the throne. But have you seen how many people actually come out to worship this person, to acknowledge this person? How much they're in awe of this person? It's pretty amazing. So it's still dormant within the individual. I mean, I was here recently when they came to Albert Park Beach. There were thousands here just to greet this guy, you know, Harry Windsor. You know, that's, but in a sense, he's linked to that monarchy, and some people want that. Prabhupada was actually in favor of the monarchy, but not necessarily, and it's not necessarily that it's someone that then is by birth necessarily. If the qualifications are there, then it can continue on. But Prabhupada was into having some set of leaders or a leader that was then advised by the Brahmin community, right? So he was actually very much for spiritual communism, making sure that everybody had proper work. The communist system failed because, again, selfishness and greed. But if there's a system where everybody is concerned about the masses and making sure that everybody has the right amount of work, and take away that factor of capitalism, of monopoly, of exploitation in business and so on and so forth, and exploitation of the worker, and if a leader has that, you know, understanding, Prabhupada was very much in favour of spiritual communism. Now you say, okay, how can we as devotees make a difference? At one stage, Prabhupada was very enthusiastic about starting a political party in God We Trust in America, and he had several devotees actually campaigning and going up for elections, but the time wasn't right. At that stage, the time wasn't right. We even had a political candidate here. So Prabhupada was for that, but then he saw that the time wasn't right for that, and he changed directions. So that time may come again, you know. When people become frustrated enough, when enough knowledge is being presented to people by us, about spiritual life, about how a leader should be, when people get the right information, the proper information, things can change. And things will change. You know, there's a lot of talk at the moment about, wow, Kali Yuga is really setting in, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like that. But the great Acharyas, the previous Acharya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, said that there is a bubble of Satya Yuga, which started at the time of Lord Chaitanya. So we're in that transition stage. It will happen. And we're the pioneers of that. We are the instigators. We have to infiltrate society. We have to bring this knowledge to everybody to actually make them aware. We have to wake up the sleeping souls from the lap of the witch called Maya. We have to wake them up. Hey, don't you understand? You are a spirit soul. You don't need to be working like an ass in a factory. You know, you have to work for Krishna. And when you have that spiritual solace, you can be anywhere and do anything and still have that connection with Krishna. So the time is coming. We'll probably see it in our lifetime where people will be so influenced by the devotees and by our preaching that they will see that we don't want one of these self-aggrandizing materialistic leaders. We want a spiritual leader who's standing up for principles. And perhaps that time is coming very soon, you know? And we just need someone, like, say, for example, a Matthew Geyer or Daniel Andrews, to really take the Krishna consciousness to make a change. I mean, it's going to be incredibly hard work because Maya is really entrenched in the material world at this stage. But it is prophesied that it will be a Satya Yuga within the Kali Yuga. So on one hand, we can take a negative view and say, yeah, this is all happening. But from a positive point of view, you can see inroads that are being made by the devotees in so many ways. We're in every country of the world at the moment. We are influencing so many people in so many different walks of life. You would be surprised who we're influencing. Just to give you an example, just on our own personal level. I had to go to a funeral this week, right, for a friend whose mother had passed away. Now, years and years ago, I had some connection with this one person who was a rock star. He was a, you know, an influential person, and I hadn't seen him for ages, right? And he was at this funeral, and I thought, wow, this is strange. He's got like a neck bead on, and he had never been to the temple. Oh, he came once for a temple years and years ago for Jamastami, but he never comes to a temple. But through the internet, he's been listening to classes by all of us and by me and other people and stuff, to the extent that, and my friend said, oh, he's now a vegetarian and he's reading Bhagavad Gita and everything. And you don't know who you're influencing. I said, wow, that's amazing. And he was fired up about Krishna consciousness. Whereas before he was a gross materialist, lost in illusion and suffering. But with Krishna consciousness came to him in a different way. So Mr. Google and the internet is our also Satyayuga vehicle for disseminating this knowledge of Krishna consciousness. You'll see in your lifetime how the... And it depends on how much we do. You know? Krishna said to Arjuna, look, I mean, this battle is happening. I'm killing everybody one way or another. Do you want to be a part of this or what? You can take all the glory. I'm asking you to do this. And Arjuna said, yes, I'll do it. And he killed and he killed and he killed. He fought like anything. That's required of us. This will happen to it. The Satyayuga will come. It's up to us whether it's a slow pace and a cushy ride, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, or we're actually going out for it and helping people relieve their suffering. And then you'll see the leadership changes. Changes can happen like that. Even in my lifetime, we thought that the communist system was here to stay. You know? We thought communism and capitalism, they were the two great enemies. Then within the span of maybe 5 years, there was glasnost and perestroika. And then all of a sudden, communism was gone. Wasn't it? Same with the Nazi nationalism. It was like, you know, all of a sudden there's this, and gone. So it doesn't take that long. You'll see it in your life. There will rise a spiritual leader in different countries. You can already see it in some countries. You know, like, what's his name? Trudeau in Canada. He's a real thinking sort of gentle person, you know, and he has a different outlook on life. He's forward, more humble, more gentle. You can see it happening. Also, the president of France is a little bit more congenial. And even if you take, you know, Narendra Modi. You know, some may not agree with his politics, but I mean, he just met with Gopal Guru Maharaj. You know, and was completely humbled and respectful to Maharaj. And Maharaj and Yudhisthira Govinda, my colleague in communication, gave him so much literature and everything, he was overwhelmed by it. And he's a spiritualist. I mean, he gets up at 4 o'clock in the morning and meditates, chants the scriptures, reads Bhagavad Gita at 4 o'clock in the morning, does yoga, asanas, pranayama, and then he goes and runs his business, he runs the country. I mean, we may not agree with his politics, but here we go, this is Satyayuga. It's coming. So be patient. And it's really up to each and every one of us. How we want to make that change. Have you got a question? Yes.
So what is the difference?
I'm sorry, I've got really bad hearing, so you're going to have to speak up really loudly.
What is the difference of spiritual communism and normal communism?
Spiritual communism, material communism had no God. The person that founded communism actually said that worshipping God was a drug for the masses to keep them passive. So in that communism, there is no God. They're atheists. Spiritual communism is that there is a God and we do everything for the service of God. But everybody is treated equally. Equally. My spiritual master is actually giving a lot of discourses on this point of equality. You know how politicians say, you know, we're all equal. And they don't believe in God. We're all equal. Well, how can you say that? The quality of equality is actually a metaphysical thing. It's a spiritual thing. You know, we're not equal in many ways. I'm taller than you. Somebody's a better sportsman than me. Someone's more intellectual than me. Someone is a lady. Someone is a man. We're not equal. We're all different. Someone has great athletic ability, someone has great... So where do you say that we're equal? Someone is young, someone is old, someone is disabled, someone is this. Someone's black, someone's white, someone lives in poverty, someone lives in riches. How can you say we're all equal? So equality, as Sridhananda Maharaj is saying, is on a metaphysical level. So if you're disputing anything, and you're talking about anything, if these politicians are talking about equality, then come on a spiritual platform. Our equality is that we are spirit souls, part and parcel of God, equal in every single way. As is the cow, as is the animals, as is the any living entity. And in a spiritual communism system, that's recognized, that we're all equal on a spiritual level, and everyone should be treated equally on a spiritual level. Does that make sense? Yes, Mother G. I can't hear you, I'm sorry. Old age is creeping in, man. I tell you, I hate it, but anyway, I can't hear.
And you mentioned that media controls everything, but it's actually the some they call it corporate or oligarchy, not democracy, because it's not the media that controls. Media is controlled by mainly, in America, 75% of media is paid by pharmaceutical companies.
Yep.
And here we have Murdoch, his son is having a pharmaceutical company. So for me, the way I see democracy is set up, so the corporations and those who have the money to rule, actually the Vaishyas to rule. Not opposite, the Kshatriyas are those who control the greed of the Vaishyas, but the democracy is set up opposite. The Vaishyas control the state and the government and the whole country.
Oh, yeah.
Because they pay, for the elections you need to have money. And the ruler, the first principle for the Kshatriya, he cannot accept charity.
Yep.
And we see this...
Oh, there's no Kshatriyas leading at the moment. That's absolutely true.
When this is broken, then we have corrupted
economic.
They're obliged to those who give them money.
Yeah.
They create laws which they sue those who have given them money. So it's not democracy.
No, of course.
And
Prabhupada called it demon crazy.
And also...
Did you hear that one before? Prabhupada actually called it demon crazy because they're all demons, basically. Unfortunate, but yeah, I hear what you're saying, Mother G, and it's true. If you really get into the whole economics of everything, it's quite corrupted. But, you know, even the President of the United States is one of the biggest Vaishyas. I mean, you know, and he just talks 100% lies. And people believe him. He's a bigot. He's a fornicator. He's a corrupt person. And yet people think, oh yeah, I'll vote for him. He looks pretty good, you know. He was on TV. Ridiculous stuff. But I'm saying, and this is what we have to have that enthusiasm for, this utsahara, that we understand that things are going to change. But it's up to each individual person. How you chant your rounds in the morning, how you follow through with your service, how you're serving your spiritual master, and how much we're actually infiltrating the public with this knowledge. It's up to each individual. It's not just up to the temple president and the management. It's up to each individual person. The responsibility is yours. It has been given to you when you got your beads. You know, we had that jagya just recently upstairs with two gurus. I mean, it was far out. Maybe it's just because I'm getting older or something, but something mystical actually happens at these jagyas when you take initiation. Something really spiritual happens, you know? And there's some interchange that happens on a different dimension or whatever. It's just incredible. You know, you have Sipi Vista, the fire of Vishnu is there. There's devotees reading Bhagavatam. There's Brahmana is there. The gurus are there, Krishna is there, the Shalagram is there. It's like there's a compressed point of spirituality in this room upstairs. It's just a room, but all of a sudden it gets transformed into a spiritual realm. And there's like encapsulated, and everybody's just immersed in this event that's happening. And then, you know, the spiritual master says, now, I'm going to initiate you. And you promise to do these things? Yes, I promise to do these things. What you're promising is to push on the movement of Krishna consciousness. And as soon as the beads leave his hands to your hands, you've made a commitment to follow exactly what he's saying. Because he's 100% dedicated to serving Krishna. And then you have to also. And with that dedication, you will actually be empowered to change the world. It is in our hands, it's in our children's hands, and it's our hands. But the Satyayuga is coming. The bubble of 10,000 years Satyayuga is coming. So when you hear someone, whether it's a devotee or a non-devotee, start going on about how rotten life is and how the world is going to pot and how it's all just really horrible place and this is wrong and that's wrong, don't countenance that. Don't be part of that. Take the positive approach. Ah, yes, Prabhu, but it's only temporary. You can see there's positive things happening. And change the whole thing around. Because of us, we can change it. Each individual can change it. I better stop here. Srila Prabhupada... Oh, gee, I better stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki!